Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We have the latest on health and healing, living a longer and healthier and happier life. Today, we have a study on coenzyme Q10 and how it can help regulate your blood sugar, and especially if you have any form of metabolic syndrome, heart disease, diabetes, prediabetes. Now, coenzyme Q10 we manufacture in all the cells of our body, but as we get older, it substantially is reduced. Also, if you take statin drugs, that will deplete your vitamin or your coenzyme Q10. And we need coenzyme Q10 because it creates the energy within the cell. That's why the most is in your heart and your brain. The two organs of the body require a lot of energy for a lot of thinking and a lot of living. So you want to make sure you have at least 100 milligrams or more every day of coenzyme Q10. If you have a need, let's say you have Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, then your health professional will guide you at a different protocol level, substantially more. But for this study, it was 8 weeks long, and they used 100 milligrams of coenzyme Q10, and they saw a huge improvement in the plasma total antioxidants. And this was published in the European Journal of Nutrition at Cashin University of Medical Sciences. So what it means is this. We have, between people with heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, prediabetes, we probably have about 150 million Americans. Yeah, about 40% of the population, adults mainly, who suffer from these conditions. And we want to keep a more normal insulin level, blood sugar level. And this coenzyme Q10 helped do exactly that. Also, from the University of Michigan comes a study about, okay, you overeat. Most people do at different times, especially holidays, especially when they're traveling. They're wanting to test not just the culture of another country, but the uniqueness of the food within that culture. And that's why we like Chinese food, Japanese food, Italian food, French food, etc. University of Michigan found that when we overeat, at least for a week, that really stresses our body. It's not good for us, and we all know that. But here's what they found is, at the same time that you're overeating, if you're also exercising, that the exercise, like a good power walk for 45 minutes after a meal, can negate much of the harm of overeating all those excess calories, especially the fat. And this was presented at the American Physiological Society's annual meeting and this was done at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. So what they did is they gave young, healthy students, average age I think was around 24, and they gave them a really overwhelming diet for a week, far more than what the body required. Similar to what the average American consumes on a regular basis, lots of junk food. But then they also had them do aerobic exercise every day, and that helps break down the lipids and prevents inflammation of the fatty tissue. And when you have inflammation in your fatty tissue, you can end up with all forms of problems, including muscle pain, intermittent claudication, pain around your joints. Yeah, so they looked at how the fat would be measured. They looked at C-reactive protein in people who do not exercise but overeat, and it's deadly. C-reactive protein, homocysteine, and fibrinogen, when it's elevated, means you have a much higher risk of a heart attack or stroke. So you want to reduce all this inflammation, and the exercise did exactly that. So they overate for a week, but they exercised, and they showed no signs of inflammation in their fatty tissue and no change in their glucose tolerance. And that's a good thing. Also, they found out that there are strong biological changes in post-traumatic stress disorder patients, and you can reverse it with talk therapy. This is from the University of Szeged in Hungary. This was published in the Biological Psychiatry Journal, and it showed that cognitive behavioral therapy for post-traumatic stress disorder, not only reduces symptoms, but also affects the underlying biology of this disorder. So it's talk therapy. And they had a group of people with post-traumatic stress disorder, and they gave them talk therapy for 12 weeks. And it substantially improved their cognition, their stress hormone levels. In effect, it allowed them to live a normal life. Today, we don't do that. We give people drugs. It doesn't take away what caused the stress. It doesn't take away the damage done to the body with elevated hormones like cortisol. And so you may not feel the pain, but it's still there emotionally. You want to resolve it. You want to understand its lessons. You want to be able to forgive and go on with your life. Talk therapy does that. That's the conclusion of this. And they also show that there were structural changes in the brain, such as shrinkage of the hippocampus, are reversible in trauma victims. Talk therapy can help normalize these alterations and improve symptoms. Furthermore, the regeneration of the hippocampus correlated with the expression of a gene that balances the activity of the stress hormone, cortisol, at the level of cells. So the findings suggest that talk therapy may modulate fundamental biological factors, changes in gene expression, brain structure, and the psychological improvement is all closely interrelated. Good news for those of you suffering from trauma and stress. Also, I've been encouraging people to eat grapes since I read a book back in 1967 called The Grape Cure. A little tiny book, this big, right? And it was about a person who had terminal cancer and how nothing was working and it looked very bleak. And they began to hear about a old folk tale about grapes. And so they began to eat grapes and then drink a lot of grape juice every day. And they overcame their cancer. Now, was it because of that? I can't say. That's a long time ago. And it was just a person giving their experience. But it left an impression on me. So I began to research what's in a grape, the grape skin, the grape seed, the grape flesh, what's in grape juice. And I began to see, wow, there's this grape seed extract, and that's very important, has a lot of medicinal value, and it's in the scientific literature. So the University of Colorado Cancer Center just did a study, and it was published in the journal Nutrition and Cancer, and it describes the laboratory synthesis of the most active component of grapeseed extract called B2G2, and it shows this compound induces cell death in prostate cancer cells. It causes the cancer cells to commit suicide while leaving all your healthy cells unharmed. Quote, we've shown similar anti-cancer activity in the past with grapeseed extract, but now we know B2G2 is its most biologically active ingredient. Okay, so why not just do one of three things? Eat more grapes, organic grapes. Can't get organic, which are annual, meaning they're about 6 months a year you can get organic, and then you can't. But if you want to get the organic, non-organic, spray them with a veggie wash. And you spray it, and you rinse it in water, agitate it three times. And that gets rid of almost all the pesticide that's been sprayed on it. Then take organic grape juice. That's the second thing you could do. Organic grape concentrate, which is grape juice, has had the water removed by about a third, so it's much stronger, more potent. And then most potent at all is the grape powder. It's where you've evaporated the juice, which is about 97% water. What you're left with is the actual healing power of grapes. So however you get the grapes in your body, that's up to you. But studies have shown the effectiveness against cancer cells and have also shown that grapes have a mechanism that can help a lot of other parts of the body, including the heart, because it's rich in polyphenols. And I believe in acupuncture. The scientific literature is filled with thousands of studies on the healing power of acupuncture. Well, from University of Chinese Medicine, acupuncture can treat Alzheimer's disease. An increasing number of clinical and animal studies have confirmed that acupuncture is effective for the treatment of Alzheimer's disease. There's a part of the acupuncture, I'm sure you've seen the little, they burn this little, it looks like some moss under a glass on the body. And that's with acupuncture. Well, this is another alternative for complementary therapy used to treat Alzheimer's disease. And a group of doctors led by Dr. Du and his team at the university use the natural warming amoxibustion and with the acupuncture to observe the action of pre-moxibustion on preventing pergam cell death in rat models of Alzheimer's disease. And it worked. So one more thing you can do, just one more piece of a puzzle. And also from Northwestern University comes a study about the rhythm of breathing affects memory and fear. The scientists have discovered that for the first time that the rhythm of breathing creates electrical activity in the human brain that enhances emotional judgments and memory recall. These effects on behavior depend critically on whether you inhale or exhale, and whether you breathe through the mouth or nose. In the study, individuals were able to identify a fearful face more quickly if they encountered the face when breathing and compared to breathing out. So you breathe in, you get one kind of memory, you breathe out, you get another. Individuals also were more likely to remember an object if they encountered it on the inhaled breath, inhaling, versus the exhaling. The effect disappeared if breathing was through the mouth. This discovery led scientists to ask whether cognitive function, typically associated with these brain areas, in particular fear, processing, and memory, could also be affected by breathing. And the amygdala, this A-M-Y-G-D-A-L-A, is strongly linked to emotional processing, in particular fear-related emotions. So scientists ask about 60 subjects to make rapid decisions on emotional expressions in the lab environment while recording their breathing. They were presented with faces showing expressions of either fear or surprise. The subjects had to indicate as quickly as they could which emotion each face was expressing. When faces were encountered during inhalation, subjects recognized them as fearful more quickly than when faces were encountered during exhaling. This was not true for faces expressing surprise. So why is this important? Because aside from this study, there is a person, his name is Sean Bhatnagar, and he owned the Shree Center in Manhattan and Princeton for decades. I don't know where he lives now, but I know he's still alive in his mid-80s, and when I understand, healthy and continuing to teach, came from India. His father was Gandhi's physician. I've known Sean for, since he appeared on my radio show back, WMCA, back at around 1972. In any case, it's all about the breathing, controlling your breathing. And I began to use breathing exercises when running and racing, because when the gun would go off, suddenly you're barreling out of there. You've all seen it, people going out, but then after a period of time, they get slower and slower until they go way back. And that's because initially, you're breathing up here, you're not breathing deeply, and your cortisol is rushing, the fight or flight adrenaline is taken over. You're running with your emotions. And I found that was true in myself as well. But I actually learned this lesson when I was in seventh grade. I was on the basketball team. Coach Kincaid, I was on the first team, guard, and I had very high percentage of stealing the ball, rebound, and shooting until we got into a game. And nothing worked. I'd missed the basket. And after two games, Coach Kincaid said, "Gary, why is it you do so well in practice, but you're not hitting the basket and missing shots, layups in the game?" I don't know. He said, "Are you afraid?" I said, "Well, I'm excited. I don't want to fail. I don't want to disappoint anyone." He said, "Then do this." He gave me a little booklet, a little tiny book, and it was all about relaxing as you compete. because the more relaxed you are, the better your competition. And he said, I just want you to keep putting in your mind when you're in a game, your practice, relax, have fun, like you do when we're scrimmaging. So I tried it, and lo and behold, he was right. I did well in games as I would in practice. I de-stressed. I put my mind into relaxing mode. So one day I was running a race, a short race, and I didn't do well. I was way off my training. I could train a lot faster than what I was running. And I was having trouble running a six-minute pace when normally I'd go out at 5:02 and with ease. Not now. Then I realized it was my breathing. And so I spoke with Sham, and he said how to breathe deeply and relax, and the sound you make. I tried it. And from then on till this day, I use breathing. And when you realize that breathing is so important in all athletic competition, so when you relax yourself, breathe deep, put your mind in a good place and keep it there. Recently, just 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, Sunday, the Florida State Championships. And as I was driving over early in the morning, thunderstorms. I think, okay, get over there. Terrible thunderstorms, cold rain. And everyone's under this place and waiting to get out. And the guy said, let's start the race. It's not going to stop. And so we went out there, and I just took a moment. I just said, the rain will cool me off, so I'll be able to relax, won't be hot. And I just kept my mind in that same place. And gun went off, went out, and did well. Set a new state record and won 2 golds. And I don't think I could have done that. I know I couldn't have done it if I was just racing on pure energy. Breathing is so important. Don't breathe through the neck. Bring it down deep, a little stronger on the exhale, and relax yourself in the process. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall. Go to GaryNall.com, scroll down so you can get the newsletter, because all this good information is right there every morning for you, and a lot more. Recipes with photographs, and if I'm doing something important, like I got a webinar coming up, I'll announce it shortly, on building the immune system naturally. It'll be about a 6-hour webinar. Everybody should need that and be attentive to that, because my webinars are packed with information. I have a lot of other people besides myself who are going to be a part of that. So that will be announced in the newsletter as well. It's over the air. So just go get the newsletter, sign up for it. John LaBelle will send it right out to you every morning. All right, we're going to take a break. For those of you who watch the rest of the show, we have a lot of good stuff coming at you. Please stay with us. I'm Gary Nall. I'd like to welcome all of you who are joining in around the United States. I'm doing the program in 2 segments. The first, I'm filming it. It's streamed. And because a lot of people like to see the host, and that's our health and nutrition segment, it can run up to a half hour. And then the rest of the program, because I want to take calls to see what's on your mind, how you're feeling about different issues in life, and if you have issues that I could help you with, by all means, give us a call at 888-874-4888. And when we're doing some of the things I'm going to be sharing with you, I try to distinguish what is my opinion, which is no more valid than anyone else's, just an opinion or a hypothesis, versus when I'm doing hard-hitting investigative reporting, commentaries, showing a documentary. And please understand, when you turn on the radio to PRN or any of the other stations, including our sister station where I've been for 45 years, WBAI, my statements in no way, shape, or form reflect a support from the station or its producers or its host or the local station board or national board. They have their own ideas. I have mine. And so they're my ideas. I'm responsible for them. Now, imagine this. Every single statement that I make in my health nutrition segment, I show you, I explain the source, the peer review library of the Library of Medicine's journal, peer review system, the institution where it was conducted, and then the information. You can validate that for yourself. In all of the commentaries, it goes through a vetting process. First, it's the scholarship vetting process, where an outside independent scholar reviews my work to see, is it accurate? And if so, based upon what? And then it goes through a legal vetting, and then I share it with you. In over 880 articles, I've yet to have to retract anything, which shows you that in a long career, I take accuracy to heart. And yet, when I've been invited by Bonnie Faulkner to give my views on Gardasil vaccine for young teenage females, the station in the Pacifica station in Berkeley banned the show, wouldn't allow freedom of speech, wouldn't allow the idea to be shared. Instead, just attacked. It was interesting because that the vote was very, very close. And it was possible that the information that I would have shared, all coming from scientific journals, about why Gardasil should not be included, might have made the difference. So there's just rampant hypocrisy everywhere in the media, where people give us their opinion, but act as if it's fact. Look at the facts. Do your own research, especially if you have something to begin that research. I've done articles against the World Health Organization, against Eli Lilly, against the FDA, the CDC, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, Anthony Fauci's group, and all that is cited, footnotes showing these are facts. Now remember, the difference between someone saying, well, I disagree with that, that's fine, disagree with anything you want. But show me where you did your research. Show me what you base your difference on. I'll always show you the research on this end. And that's why we are the number one progressive outlet in America of sharing quality information that is non-political, non-ideological. It doesn't put a finger on the scale to come down on one side or the other. We just show you the facts and also show you the remedies. Look at everything we've said about the environment. Every single statement has come true, and it's going to get worse unless one day you wake up and decide not to trust those who say, well, nothing needs to change right now, maybe in 50 or 100 years. No. Everything should change now. I'll give you an example. A study finds that nearly 40% of Americans, quote, claim they are prepared for the worst when it comes to their homes. Yet, out of 2,000 homeowners polled, 65% of policyholders admit they have no idea what their home insurance actually covers. A majority, 53%, say they live in a natural disaster-prone area, and 2 in 3 are willing to go the extra mile to protect their homes from potential catastrophes, even if that means paying more for home insurance. Respondents believe the most important coverage to have on a home nowadays includes fire damage protection, storm damage, and coverage for personal valuables. Here's what's interesting. Here's how I would break that down. First, I would say you're trying to protect your home by staying in an area that is a hazard zone. Okay? So you think that protecting your home means if the home is damaged, you can get the insurance company to give you the money to rebuild it. Instead of asking, why am I living here? Shouldn't I look for a safer place to live? Shouldn't the state, knowing that hundreds of thousands, even millions, depending upon the state, like California, Arizona, Nevada, 80% of Texas, Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, Kansas. These are the states that are not sustainable. It says nothing against the people, but it says a lot about people who are not willing to change for whatever their reason, comfort, familiarity, closeness to the things that they value. That's understandable. That's completely human. But how many times do you have to get hit with a hurricane and then you end up losing a roof, or the roof opens up and the water floods in, but then your insurance company says, well, we're not covering for water damage. We're only covering, paying for the wind damage, which was repairing part of your roof. But the whole roof opened and now my whole house is destroyed. Too bad you don't have that coverage. In fact, this happened about 7 years ago, more or less, in Louisiana, where a storm hit way inland and destroyed over 300,000 homes with water damage, but they weren't insured for flooding because they've never flooded in their history. So they couldn't repair the homes because of mold. As a result, they had to be torn down. What do you do if you're a working class person and you don't have your home insured in everything? And now insurance companies are going broke, especially in Florida. Many are leaving the state. Others have filed for they're insolvent. And now they're really increasing the premiums tremendously. And still you don't get all the coverage. I've been in two Category 4, literally Category 5. It was 2 miles an hour, 154 miles an hour wind when a Category 5 is 156. In any case, I've gone through two of those. The first one, I thought I was prepared, meaning, and none of these people said they were preparing their home. For example, if you live in a fire area, a lot of people do in California, for example. Do you have an 18-foot trailer with two 55-gallon drums of gasoline and dry, cool storage? Why? It's simple. A fire is not going to happen instantaneously. It generally comes when the winds reach an area and there's cinders, and that starts a fire, and they can leap, you know, miles, especially if it's like 60, 70 mile an hour winds, which frequently happen in California. So do you have a trailer that when you see that there is a fire approaching, you take all your valuables, your furniture, clothing, all your paperwork, anything that's important to you, you put it on the trailer and you drive out of harm's way? Do you have a place to go to? Do you, for example, if you're in southern Florida, east or west, do you have a place in Georgia, if you go up the East Coast, or Alabama, if you go up the West Coast of Florida? Is there a motel that you could stay there and you're out of harm's way of a hurricane, for example, or a fire? And the answer is almost never. Do you have a commercial grade fire retardant foam that you could spray on your house? No. Well, that would protect it. Do you have an internal and external sprinkler system, meaning running a water line down the top of your house, the ridge of your house, and then down the sides, so fire coming, you completely soak the house and get ready to soak the inside if necessary? Do you have plastic to put over all the furniture if you're going to turn on internal sprinklers? Internal sprinklers? You mean those things you see in office buildings and motels and hotels? Yes, same ones. No, why would I? Well, in case your house ever burns down, and there are occasions, maybe one in a million, that a house burns down. No, it's all the time, every day, every minute of every day. So why not prepare? And do you have backup food supplies? Did you build a little, you know, storage facility for yourself under the house where foods can keep preserved, dried, freeze-dried, canned for a long time if it's below 58 degrees? No. It's always available at the store. Well, now we're running out of food all the time. I'm challenged also in trying to get things I need. All right? I just placed an order for my animals and myself because I feed them very healthy, and half the order was missing, meaning they don't have it in stock. This is common now, and it's going to be more common when we see that the Netherlands, the second largest exporter of food in the world, and by the way, it's only the size of Indiana, and yet it's the most perfect agricultural center, both for organic and commercial, but that's the Holland people. They're really masters of farming. There's no one better. And yet now they're being closed down, all the farms, 3,000 farms now, and that's just the beginning. And who wants that? Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum. I'm opposed to that, and we're fighting back. But in any case, what happens when a place that had been producing your food no longer exists? What's your plan B? So you could get out of harm's way, choose not to. You could protect your domicile. Did you raise the commercial generator off the ground? So if there's flooding, it won't flood your generator. Therefore, you'll continue to have electricity. Did you put a cap around your electrical and water connection outside so your pump will continue to work? No. Why not? It's not expensive. This way you have water, you have electricity throughout and a storm and after a storm as well. Things that we could do, we choose not to. Why? So here's a question for everyone in the audience. Why is it when it comes to, we know that our economy is bankrupt, it will collapse in segments, not all at once, and the assets, which are the equities, are going to be hard hit. We now see Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies going down. They're junk. There's nothing backing them up. It's just a stupid game that people play and think they're smart. You know, oh, I bought it at 40,000, now 67,000. Well, now it's at 17,000. What if it goes to 5,000? And what if you borrowed against it? And what if mortgage people allowed you to buy your house using cryptocurrency? You don't think there's not going to be a call and margin call saying, you owe us now $300,000. We need it within 24 hours. Well, I don't have it. It was all in Bitcoin. Too bad. We're not sitting and thinking about things in a deep and meaningful way because we're not presented with deep, meaningful suggestions. Just all political and all ideological answers to everything. So why? I'm asking your opinion now, so please call in and share it. 888-874-4888. Why is it we have so many things we're doing just the opposite? Why is it that a country that it prides itself and historically has had freedom of speech, groups have been attacked because someone didn't like their speech? But overall, an American can say just about anything they want, even if people don't like what they want. And the First Amendment was created for people who had objectionable speech, not pleasant, happy speech. When people are saying things that are vile and derogatory, they're still protected. You can boycott the person. You can stop listening to them. You can turn them off the radio. You can turn off the television. You don't have to vote for them if you don't like what they have to say. But you don't want to gang up as now the entire corporate America and its control over Congress is ganged up to silence your speech. Twitter, absolute, irrefutable, 100% proof they've been censoring speech. Now they have the documents to show it. Oh, and by the way, did you know that Fauci's daughter worked for Twitter, and that the former top, one of the top lawyers for the FBI worked for Twitter, and as its general counsel, all these people that you didn't know were associated with Twitter were. Do you think that they were doing the right thing? No, they weren't. They were doing the wrong thing. But why did we tolerate that? How many, for example, I wrote three articles in a row showing you that the very people claiming that the vaccines were safe and effective all had long histories of lying and breaking the laws and paying billions of dollars in fines. Nobody went to jail, nobody lost their career, and no corporation lost its charter, which should have been the case. If a corporation knows in advance, with malice aforethought, premeditated, they're going to break the law, like the makers of OxyContin. The FDA knew that there weren't proper safety trials. Doctors knew that there was addiction and suicides. Everybody knew, and the Wexler family got rich. Even after it was finally decided that it was all bad and they were fined, they were still left with billions of dollars after paying the fines, and now they're one of America's richest families. Well, what lessons learned if all you have to do is pay a check and you don't have to surrender anything of your power? That's where we're at. If you're powerful, you're a celebrity, and you belong to the right political group, you're virtually assured of being protected. Is that fair? Because if you and I jaywalk, we could get arrested or ticketed. And now, why is it Americans are not doing anything on any level? Are they saving? No, they're spending everything they have. Are they buying stuff they need or want? Want. What happens when they have misspent and not bought the right things, and don't protect their home, and can't afford where they're living, and now they're living in a crime zone, but afraid to move to a safer area that could be more friendly to them, a peace of mind, and even make new friends, and they're not doing it. What does this say? That's the question I'm asking. Let's say hello to Joe from Queens. Hi, Joe, your turn.
I'd like to make a comment about, I could tie this into the whole censorship thing that you're talking about. I think it's important to make a distinction between who's right and who's wrong about, you know, COVID, the vaccines, masks, et cetera. Yeah, the motivation between that and the motivation of why people believe one way or the other.
Okay, and let's break that down. Hold on. Let's break down what you just said. It's a legitimate question you raise, and thank you. Let's just take this part. When all the information came out, we didn't have anything to rebut it against. So everyone wanted to believe that this was capable of killing everyone, no matter what your age or state of health, and everywhere. And the only protection you would have is to stay home, hide from the virus. So quarantining. But in the process of doing that, there were a group of epidemiologists who studied these things, one from Harvard, one from Oxford, and one from Stanford, who got together and said, this is wrong. They're not lowering infection and they're not lowering death from this. But then we were told, don't use accepted drugs that your average doctor could get in a heartbeat and help save your life. We were told all doctors in the world, stand back, step down, don't do anything. Let the people stay at home until they're too sick to go to the hospital, must go to the hospital. And then we'll give them an experimental drug that was never proven safe, remdesivir. Okay. Now we look back and we see that the drugs they were condemning that could have been used were beneficial. And there are thousands of studies now proving that. We were told even if you got COVID and had natural immunity, there is no real natural immunity from COVID. Wait for the vaccine. That's the real protection. There are over 200 studies in the peer-reviewed literature. Find them for yourself. I'm saying they're there. I have them. I've written on them. I broadcast on them. I've cited them. They said wear one mask, two masks, any kind of mask, anything. And we looked at all the studies in the world. I mean, the entire scientific literature. And unless you cherry-pick something, you couldn't find where these were beneficial. But I could find dozens of studies and cited them and published them online to show, here are the studies. You make up your mind whether you want to protect yourself. But a visor, a plastic visor over the face, it fits, you know, like a welder's helmet, but it's not metal. It's just plastic so you can see out. But that protects your eyes, your nose, and your mouth. And then an ionizer, there's dozens of different types, that protects, also forces the ions coming out, trap the particulate matter, whether it's standards, molds, whatever, and helps neutralize it. Then practice proper hygiene, keep your immune system strong. That, the scientific literature states, is good. But everything else shows a detriment using the masks. And now there's study after study after study. And they said, well, you won't know if you're sick unless you get the PCR test. I happen to know personally, the longest interview we ever did, which was televised, an hour and 54 minutes, is up on the internet. It went viral. It ended up in people's documentaries. No one ever gave me credit for it, but you see me interviewing Kerry Mullis in his home. And he said, don't use this for diagnosing. You know, it's an amplification. It's very good for what it does, but it can't tell you which virus you're looking at, and it can't tell you, are you sick from that virus? And if you keep amplifying at a certain level above 33 amplifications, it's all junk. Fauci said that. We have the clip. So that meant that all the people were testing positive for a false study, meaning there was no legitimacy to the test. So a lot of people were told they're a case, and therefore the media blew up the whole numbers. It's in the literature. And now we see what happens when we put into these people. Did you hear that the second reporter, a journalist, dropped dead, and they're both young? Did they get vaccinated? How many other young people are you seeing dropping dead? Singers and athletes, just dropping dead. No risk factors. Was it the vaccine? Well, we now have many, 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 many studies showing you that all that they told us about its safety was not true. And they wanted to cover that up. The FDA allowed them 76 years before they had to bring their evidence to the public attention. 76 years? To tell us whether something is safe by showing us your actual studies? You all knew it was safe, you said. Everyone involved, why not just give it to us? They were forced by court order, not by the openness of the FDA, not by the corporation itself. They were forced to give it. Naomi Wolf had hired a bunch of people to review this information every month And it just gets worse and worse and worse. So they knew from the beginning myocarditis and endocarditis and Bell's palsy and Guillain-Barré syndrome. They knew all this was happening. They hid it. That isn't opinion. That isn't some biased thought process. That's in the literature. That's in the documents. That's just a little bit of it. So why wouldn't they, the people who say, no, I'm all for the vaccine, without question? Okay. What if the vaccine is not safe or effective as they promised? What then? And now we're seeing all these things growing in people's arteries, and they're in all these autopsies. And poor coroner's reports, not a word in the media. Not a word. So you see, you have to look at frequently, what side does the media come down on, and then ask, is that media bias? What do they have to back up outside of Anthony Fauci or someone from the pharmaceutical industry giving you their side of the story? I'm using that just as one example. You could use this of the wrong reason we should be in Ukraine and sponsoring that war as a proxy war with NATO to destroy Russia. All the things you see around the world, I'm simply saying, do your homework, do it deeply, and don't start off with a political conviction that something is right or wrong. Look at what the facts tell you is right or wrong. Is that reasonable to you, Joe?
You've been presenting is very convincing. But I want to talk about motivation, because I think it turns out that this issue with the vaccines and COVID, et cetera, tends to fall. The right wingers think, you know, are anti-vaccine, et cetera, and they agree with you. And the left wingers tend to agree with Fauci. So I think the reason for that, I mean, it isn't because the people on the right are objective, seekers of the truth, and that the left is just, you know, just wants to take people's freedoms away. I think that the right has gravitated towards that opinion because it satisfies their desire to, you know, denigrate and attack and have something to attack the left with. The left, on the other hand, is they have a bad, they're having an overreaction and a bad reaction to all the fake news that the right wingers promote. For instance, like all these people who are anti-vax are the same people who, you know, were the birthers. You know, they believe that thousands and thousands of Muslims celebrated 9/11 on New Jersey rooftops. You know, they're QAnon, they're all that kind of stuff. So when they hear them, you know, saying things that sound wacky, but that you've shown is got a lot of truth to it. When they hear people, you know, spouting that kind of stuff, they just automatically dismiss it as another, you know.
Okay. You've made another statement. Let's deconstruct it to see what we can learn. First, you've fallen into the habit, like a lot of people, of making it left and right, Democrat, Republican. It's not, because the people who are anti-vax include the people who cannot get a vax. Would you call a person that has an autoimmune disease, of which there are over 130 million Americans with an autoimmune disease, would you call them misguided because their doctor says, look, you already have an autoimmune reaction. Your immune system is on 5-alarm. If we put a vaccine in there that's going to create the spike protein in the cell and then trigger another autoimmune reaction to that, it could kill you. So I'm recommending not. I'm recommending that you build up your immune system. Let's help you overcome this autoimmune condition, arthritis, lupus, whatever it may be. Oh, and you've just had cancer treatment and you're on chemotherapy and radiation. That means your immune system is virtually stressed to the max. Now, in the short term, hopefully, your body will go into remission and it'll stop the proliferation of the cancer. But it could come back in a year or two from now with a vengeance because you won't have an immune system. So let's rebuild up the immune system. So the vaccine would not be in your best interest. Or what about the persons who simply are educated or concerned enough to start looking at independent data and not believing either side? and just looking for themselves. That's a lot of people. Do you believe that all these doctors and nurses, do you believe the 76,000 scientists and physicians, now it's up to 700,000 who've signed the Great Barrington Declaration, showing you that the epidemiology that the Fauci regime was basing its paradigm on was wrong? Now, these are all really, these are all men and women of science and medicine. It's not about politics to them. And they're high-level achievers in their field. Their opinions are sought after by the FDA and CDC and the World Health Organization. They have impeccable backgrounds. They publish in the peer-reviewed journal, so they're used to high-level scholarship. So you're suggesting now that they're either left-wing or right-wing, or now they're all right-wing. Nothing could be further from the truth. They're simply interested in the fact that the facts presented did not add up. There were fallacies. And in science, you should be able to challenge something in a diplomatic way, have good debate, but at least let the facts be what they are. That was not done here. So if you stripped away the monikers of left and right, red and blue, Democrat and Republican, and just look at how many people now flooded. I mean, flooded. My office is flooded, overwhelmed with calls. Well, I got the vaccine because I just wanted to go along. And they didn't say I got the vaccine because I'm a Democrat or a liberal. No. Or no one calls and says, and a lot of people who vote Republican got the vaccine. Many of these people who didn't get the vaccine are independent. And interesting, as a group, the most highly educated didn't get the vaccine. Why not? What was their rationale? I have medical doctor friends of mine who are not alternative doctors, mainstream. And they didn't get the vaccine, they told me, because the science was not there to support it. And there were too many questions they had by something being rushed through that had never been used before, and they didn't want to see themselves as a guinea pig. One doctor said he was going to get it, he was going to get it, he was going to get it, and then he started seeing his own patients coming in with clear evidence of vaccine injury. And yet he was told, shut up about it. The nurses were told, shut up about this. Don't file any reports to the Vaccine Adverse Reporting Agency. It wasn't political. Now, the people running the show, they're not political. They're economic. Do you think any of this has to do with politics? It has nothing to do with politics. It's only political in the sense that those in power have been able to instruct their minions and legions and the bureaucracy, keep it all on one program and let Fauci be the band leader that leads everyone down the street. Now we're seeing everything that we were told was untrue. Everything. And so now you're starting to see articles and books and lawsuits galore. So please, Joe, let's stop making everything political and let's look at the fact that every human being can make a mistake. We all do. Even with the best intents, whether you're liberal or conservative, it's happened countless times. Take the politics out and just look at it, what it is to be a human being and scared. You left out the indoctrination principle. The indoctrination principle says that if you're scared enough, you're more likely to do what you're told. And so you trusted, and people trusted their lives, their children's lives, with something they should not have trusted. Have we learned anything from it? Time will tell. I appreciate your call, Joe, from Queens. Thank you. Now we're going to go to a clip, and I'm not going to break it at 5 minutes from now to say goodbye to WBI. I'll just let you know in 5 minutes, BAI has to go over and do their news. But we're going to play a clip now that's important. Why? Because it touches on all this. This is Neil Oliver. Now, Neil and I do not see eye to eye in a lot of things, but he is right on this. We are using political and economic power moves in order to take away things that are literally the basis of life. There are going to be people freeze to death throughout Europe because they cannot afford heat. All right? There are going to be people who are going to go through misery, and the government's not there to protect them. The government's made nothing but bad choices. But this is still part of that great green reset, and there's nothing really green in it. And by the way, tomorrow I'm going to show you a clip of a windless, it's a wind turbine that's motionless, meaning none of those big fan-like blades going around, destroying the environment, causing noise, blighting, and non-biodegradable. These are things that can fit on a house, or at least a flat roof house. Kind of interesting where the technology is going. I certainly support that. And let's hear what he has to say now. This is a clip of him talking about the green agenda that's not green. You can agree or disagree with or part of whole what he's saying, but it's worth listening to have a conversation.
Winter arrived last week, and with it a dose of reality. All that talk about wrapping up warm in the house, putting on an extra jumper, hot water bottles, full-size onesies. It's dangerous nonsense. It might be fine for a while if you're a healthy adult, but it's a tragedy in slow motion for babies, young children, the elderly, the sick. And it's only the second week in December. It's a long time until spring. Even if layering up and donning a hat were enough to keep a body going, once cold properly gets a grip of a house, it too starts to die in its own way. The creep of dampness that takes its own toll on house and health alike. Frozen pipes followed by burst pipes and not enough plumbers to go round. People who can't afford to heat their homes are likely struggling with spiking food bills as well. All of this in a first world country that was home to the Industrial Revolution that changed the world for the better and lifted billions out of poverty. Now the grannies saved by locking down the world until its heart stopped beating are sitting down to die alone of cold and hunger. It's amazing how inventive the establishment has proven to be in coming up with ways to invite the elderly to die miserable, lonely deaths. Our so-called leaders tell us all of it is a price worth paying, by which they mean worth paying by us, the little people. All the decisions are being made by those who have no intention whatever of spending so much as 5 minutes in an unheated home. Turn up the thermostat and fill out the expenses claim. That's the order of the day for our elected representatives. All around them are those that can't afford to heat their own homes but are forced to subsidise the warmth of the sociopaths that put us here with their hubris and eco-vanity. Regardless of what nonsense they spout about the causes, Putin, climate, whatever, at least know that the misery here now and that lies ahead for millions is entirely the consequence of decades of willful destruction in the name of saving the world, a green agenda that absolutely is not green. Remember a few months back when a few hot days in a row occasioned yet more fear porn about imminent climate catastrophe? Now the temperature is below zero and all we hear is cheery twaddle about clear blue skies and hopes for a white Christmas. For anyone still concerned, I'm here to tell you the polar bears are doing fine. I'm told numbers are on the up as never before and the ice in Antarctica is getting thicker every day. And if one more TV presenter waxes lyrical about the joys of one-pot meals and watching telly while wrapped in a duvet, where is the outrage on behalf of millions who can't afford to turn on one radiator in one room? In a country where centuries' worth of energy lies beneath our feet, Putin didn't order the West to put him in control of the energy required to keep the lights on in Europe. Everyone used to go cap in hand to Russia. Europe's leaders outsourced energy production so they could crow about cutting emissions at home. Where we are now is entirely the consequence of politicians competing with one another to see which of them can take the title of world's most psychopathic hypocrite. We aren't allowed the energy available from a century of gas beneath our feet here in Britain because it's not green, but we're paying top dollar for 9 billion cubic litres, twice as much as last year's order, of gas fracked out of the ground in the United States. Now we're dependent on Uncle Sam. Say what you like about sippy cup Joe Biden, but he's played a blinder there. Well done, the big guy. I wonder about that sabotage of Nord Stream 2. I really do. A report published by Lancet reminded the world that around 5 million people die every year on account of climate extremes. Of those deaths, 4.5 million are caused by cold compared to 500,000 attributed to heat. In our time on this planet, an interglacial between ice ages, it's always the cold that is far more of a deadly threat to human life, 10 or 20 times as deadly. And yet still the priests of the new religion of climate fear preach that we must cool the world. You've probably heard that 97% of scientists are agreed that humans are the cause of climate change. It comes from research carried out in 2013. Do you know how that team obtained that number? They gathered nearly 12,000 scientific papers dealing with global climate change. They didn't read the papers, heavens no, that would have been proper research. Instead, they looked at just the summary paragraphs on the front covers. On that basis, they grouped them into four piles. 3,896 papers agreed humans were to blame for climate change. 7,930 took no position either way. 78 rejected the idea of it being humanity's fault, and 40 were uncertain altogether. That initial pass gave a figure of just 32% blaming humans for climate change. Obviously, that wasn't nearly scary enough. So then came the gross and clumsy cheat. The 7,930 papers that took no position on whether humans are to blame were removed from the final analysis. With them gone, the figure of 32% went up to 97%, and the likes of Barack Obama and Al Gore have been quoting it ever since. If my interpretation's correct, this is the kind of deliberate tampering with evidence that underpins the net zero madness that's being pursued by the zealots running our countries, or rather ruining our countries. In a book published in 1997, physicist Carl Sagan wrote the following. We've arranged a global civilization in which most crucial elements, transportation, communications and all other industries, agriculture, medicine, education, entertainment, protecting the environment and even the key democratic institution of voting, profoundly depend on science and technology. We have also arranged things so that almost no one understands science and technology. This is a prescription for disaster. We might get away with it for a while, but sooner or later, this combustible mixture of ignorance and power is going to blow up in our faces. In this context, it's our leaders who either fail to understand science and just parrot whatever propaganda lands in their inbox each day, or they do understand and they're lying. Either way, it's the prescription for disaster predicted by Sagan. Agenda 2030, net zero, is a second Titanic. And this time, the whole world's being herded aboard like cattle. The passengers on the original Titanic had no way of knowing what lay ahead for them in the North Atlantic. This time around, though, millions of people who could and should know better, who have no excuse now for not knowing, who could and should have realised long ago that they were being lured and lied towards disaster, are actually buying tickets for the ride on Agenda 2030, a ship of fools. 1,500 people were lost when Titanic went to the bottom. This time it's the lives of billions. I've said it before and I'll keep saying it. What lies beneath all the madness that's keeping so many millions of people perpetually on edge, knowing, just knowing that something somewhere has gone very badly wrong, is an attack on humanity itself. This fact, above all others, must be understood. We are described as useless people. We need to accept smaller, colder, hungrier lives. We should swap beef and chicken for beetles and worms. And if you're white, you're the product of original sin, bad from birth and owing creation itself an apology just for being here. Last year in Canada, 10,000 people died by euthanasia, 3% of all deaths in the country. A disabled veteran and former Paralympian, retired Corporal Christine Gauthier, says she was offered euthanasia instead of waiting any longer to have a stair lift fitted in her home. After years of asking, Gauthier was told by a health worker, quote, Madam, if you're really so desperate, we can give you medical assistance in dying now. She only wanted a stair lift. Canada's euthanasia program is soon to grow wider. Next year, there are plans to offer death to people who are mentally ill, which hardly bodes well for the clinically depressed. Plans are underway to help under-18s die too, if they want to. Human life is being devalued as easily as our currencies. Last week, there was yet another variation on the theme of stripping us of more of what it has meant to be human and alive. Also lurking under the darkening umbrella of Agenda 2030 is climate lockdown. It's here already in the form of the 15-minute city. In Britain, the scam scheme is being rolled out first in Oxford. Everyone will be confined to one of six ghettos inside which they might live out their lives on foot or perhaps by bike. The Labour Liberal Green Council responsible says it will go ahead whether people like it or not. Every resident must register their car with the council, which will use number recognition cameras to monitor their movements around the clock. Anyone driving out of their designated ghetto more than 100 times a year will be fined. This is about one agenda and one agenda only: keeping people apart, increasing the atomization of society, the deliberate division of people into smaller and smaller dependent units. This outrage proposed in Oxford is the tip of an iceberg, because we humans, we useless people, we hackable animals are so suboptimal, so contemptible in the eyes of our self-appointed superiors, we must be watched at all times. It's not just in Oxford. In every city there are cameras monitoring everyone's every move. Forget the nonsense of the 15-minute city. It's simply and plainly the bars of the cage of climate lockdown. COVID ran out of steam, and so the next excuse for total control is the weather. Here in Britain, it starts in Oxford, but the 15-minute city nonsense is already all over the world. Plans are in place for London, for Paris, for Milan, for Krakow in Poland, and in scores more places besides. In Melbourne, zero COVID zealot Dan Andrews, the Premier, recently re-elected by those in favour of seeing fellow citizens brutalised in the street by black-clad stormtroopers.